Looks like it might rain.
I'm sorry?
All them clouds looks like rain.
I'd contend, of course, they look more like clouds.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
By the by.
Whatever.
Curious, a German one once sat there and asked exactly the same question.
What question?
Though he may have been Austrian, I find distinguishing the accent some trouble. Smoked a pipe and showed an unhealthy fascination with that there tree.
Which one?
The dead one across the pond, the one with no leaves.
Oh, the one that looks like a willy.
Indeed, indeed. This said fellow held the same contention, though he used the term phallus, not the favoured villy. Spent hours of his time consumed in the supposed shape of the tree. Hours of silence as he stared and occupied his mind with thought. In finality, he turned to me and in his German brogue declared, "It is ironic. While the tree looks uncannily like a penis, my penis looks more like a tree."
What, so the kraut said his codger looked like a tree?
Well, not an oak or an elm, of course, more akin to a bonsai.
So some guy sat next to you, talked about his tackle, and you didn't think he was some sort of pervert?
He had a beard.
Well, does that mean he was or he wasn't a pervert?
It merely means he was hirsute.
And anyway, what has a beard got to do with anything?
Well, it wasn't a real beard, of course.
A fake beard? Like he was wearing some kind of disguise, you mean?
More like a grey squirrel had approached his chin, found it desirably comfortable, and decided to sleep on his face.
Well, hang on, no. So he had a squirrel stuck on his jaw? Well, no, that guy was definitely a freak.
Not so, my friend. A common facial adornment in the 1930s was the woodland creature.
Oh, right.
Example, gratis. Chamberlain returned from his tryst with Hitler wearing a badger on his top lip. Right. While indeed he did hold in his hand a piece of paper, wise of like he balanced a giant black and white rodent under his nose.
Well, you mean their skins? People wore animal skins on their faces, like, I don't know, a posh toupee for their chin.
For the most part, Churchill, of course, was an exception. He chose to sit a real-life ferret atop his pate, and chose not to feed the poor creature. The cigar-begobbed Premier gave his famous "fight them on the beaches" speech, while in a peckish frenzy, a ferret munched on his hair. Mm. That's top secret, of course.
Well, I don't think he would do that. People tell me he was a great man.
A flawed man would be more apt.
Well, I did see it on the telly that he was a drunkard, I suppose.
No, flawed, literally. Right. His narcolepsy, combined with his glass jaw and caustic tongue, meant Churchill spent most of his time unconscious on the floor. I once witnessed his Chancellor do one such thing. Winston was halfway through calling the man a transvestite when Baldwin slapped him lightly on the chin, knocking Churchill out cold for well over 3 days. As his head hit the floor, it squashed the ferret, finally dislodging the creature, and it's said that the ghost of the hair-eating rodent still roams the hallways of Downing Street.
I'm not sure I like ghosts.
It's a benevolent creature, from all accounts, if a little mischievous. It's rumoured in a whisper that it used to eat Margaret Thatcher's brassieres. Sequentially, the Iron Lady is said to have attended many state functions with her nipple poking through a ferret bite. Erroneous as that may be, it's still true.
Blimey.
And John Major signed Maastricht with his buttock hanging out of a pair of rodent-munched Y-fronts.
Well, why doesn't that surprise me?
In fact, the state of John Major's underpants were for a long while the chagrin of state embarrassment. Indeed, indeed, I was enjoined on this bench again by an undersecretary of such and such, who told me of a peculiar practice partaken at cabinet summits.
Oh, what, like the Masons with the weird chicken ritual things?
Much like the urban myth that newsreaders eschew their trousers during broadcast, the summits enforce the delegates to hand over their trousers on entering the cabinet room.
Well, why the hell would they make them take off their trousers?
A tradition. That way, the ghost of Churchill's follicle-feeding ferret would be unable to dart up the trouser leg of the Minister of Defence at a particularly sensitive time.
Well, yeah. That actually makes sense.
Well, of course. The Falklands War began when Douglas Hurd was startled during a press conference by the ferret darting up his trousers. When asked for his opinion of the Argentines, he barked, "Bloody ferrets!" What's past his prologue.
Blimey. Things you learn.
But we digress. So, while the likes of Kenneth Baker and Norman Lamont bedecked their groins in silk underwear, the man who sat beside me told of Major's lacklustre attempt at undergarments.
Grey Y-fronts.
Well, not at all. From all accounts, the man Major favoured a bright blue brief adorned with pictures of rubber ducks. He enjoyed this pair so much he wore them every other day, and they'd worn through. Besides a ferret-munched hole in the rear, the elastic had given way, and on more than one occasion, Major flashed the entire government when gravity took umbrage.
What? Tackle out?
I'm not sure how pertinent your fishing analogy is, but to favour a colloquialism, yes, meat in the butcher's shop window.
Blimey.
Literally, of course, also, on a trip to Brussels.
Never.
A wholly farcical incident involving the loose-fitting underpants, a verbal misunderstanding, the Premier's genitals, and la fenêtre de charcuterie.
What is pork sausage in a butcher's window?
Well, quite, but a laughing matter, it was not. The political fallout I learnt from an intelligence officer who sat there once was immense. Mm-hmm. Bribery and blackmail, threats of making the event public knowledge, and some CCTV footage meant that the mocked man Major was forced to sign Maastricht against his will. He switched to jockeys soon after. That's jockeys as in the undergarment, of course, not jockeys as in the gnome-like behorsed fellows. That image is frankly ridiculous.
Well, it is, but, you know, I always knew that whole EU thing was corrupt.
The CCTV footage is available on something called the Internet, and I'm told it's hysterical.
Well, I'm going to be searching Google as soon as I get home.
In the course of off, Major wasn't the only politique to flash his pride. Jacques Chirac, it's common knowledge, was a serial exposure, and not in any accidental sense either.
Well, he is French.
A well-blessed man, it's said, and one desperate to share his gift.
We all know how sick politicians can be.
Well, quite. We all remember President Bush Sr. unloading his dinner onto the lap of a passing Japanese dignitary. A very sick man, it seemed, and his progeny lacks the same manners. Yeah. On more than one occasion, as the smirking chimp emptied his stomach on a lowly congressman, he calls it sport vomiting. Rookie representatives are made to line up around the Oval Office, I've been told, in firing range of the chimp's gastro cannon. The man who bestowed this information while sharing this bench said the White House stinks.
Well, yeah.
It's a modern-day vomitorium from all balance sheets. And while the image of a retching president may seem ridiculous, it's no wonder all the real-world decisions are made by geeks.
Huh? Geeks?
Geeks. Men with beards. Proper beards. Not farcical, fur-clad woodland creatures, either. Big, wiry, magnificent chin rugs. Beards of olden lore. Gandalf beards. Beards of such grandeur they require a bevy of toga-clad beauties to constantly groom them.
Nah, see, I think you've lost me now.
Look, there's a room in Alabama populated by the rulers of the world.
Yeah.
These men are so rich, they have their beards stroked with golden combs while they make the day-to-day decisions that decide wars and presidents.
Oh, right, like a secret committee?
No, it's more of an elaborate board game.
Board game?
Yeah. Every decision is made over the roll of a dice. Right. It's the ultimate game of Dungeons and Dragons, devised as it was by a Tolkien fanatic with too much money. A cabal of specially invited players gathered after World War twice and began playing. The first dice toss divided Europe in twain. The second began dissecting the Persian Gulf. And the thrice deemed the beef burger as the world cuisine. And while that alienated a large religious community, it didn't explain what happened in Vietnam.
The Vietnam War was because of a dice toss.
A former player told me once that they used to be allowed to eat food at the board.
Right.
But after a player called Warlock spilt some spaghetti on Ho Chi Minh, thus impeding a dice roll, the death of thousands was deemed a small price to pay for a lunch break.
Bloody hell.
Saddam Hussein himself was the result of a double six.
So the world is run by roleplay game freaks?
Who'd have thunk it?
Bloody blimey. God. I knew life sucked.
And a good day to you, sir.
Looks like it may rain.
Excuse me?
The gathering clouds.
A potent metaphor.
Much like that tree across the pond.
Quite.
Well, what I mean is, the tree bears a remarkable resemblance to what Freud would do.
I resent the cut of your jib, young fellow, my lad. Freud, while sat beside me on this bench, did indeed notice the tree, but he didn't deem it any such thing.
You met Freud here? I knew he died in London, but you actually met him? Well, that's fantastic. What did he say?
The exactitude of his words defy my capture.
I'm sure what he said was remarkably incisive.
He said his todger looked like that tree.
Are you sure it was Freud?
He had a beard.
Well, yes, Freud did have a beard, but that...
Forgive my verbal intrusion, but I wasn't remarking on the presence of facial hair. He had a beard.
I'm confused, sir.
I believe it's an American colloquialism, a beard, a gentleman's misleading lady friend. An act of subversion on the part of the effete man to distract attention, you understand.
Freud was gay.
Well, frightfully, and frightened the world would know, hence the beard.
Well, if that's a lie, it borders on the slanderous.
Is the sexual preference of a person a legal matter?
Well, no,
but... Is being homosexual a heinous offence?
No, I didn't mean...
You're not the singular detractor of Freud's sexuality, of course. While the doctor whiled away his twilight years admiring the phallic nature of, well, nature, he found himself the target of much vitriol. On more than one occasion, he was the sad victim of a walk-by egging. Yolk and albumen dripped forlornly from his beard.
His facial beard?
No, he'd eschewed the chin beard this late in life, either that or it had scurried back into the woods.
I'm sorry?
No, the egg coated his female friend, much to the amusement of his lover, who I remain convinced was only after Freud's money.
Ah, a gold digger, you mean?
No, he was a disgraced politician.
Who?
John Profumo.
As in Christine Keeler?
No, as in John Profumo. Christine Keeler was an altogether different person. Besides, I very much doubt that Christine Keeler was Freud's homosexual lover.
Well, no, but...
With a world obsessed with celebrity tittle-tattle, it's no wonder the politician is a dying species.
Well, yes, quite. It seems to be more about personality at an increasing rate. Stunk politics, I believe it's called. A fairly new phenomenon, outlined in a paper by my colleague, which I discussed recently.
Hardly a new phenomenon, this stunt politics of which you speak.
Well, but my colleague says...
Did not the constituency of Lower East Wessex used to elect its parliamentary representatives based on how far you could hurl a sheep? Didn't the phenomenon only end in March of 1832, when Pitt the Younger tossed a bleating lamb across the dispatch box, badly injuring the speaker? Well, new phenomenon indeed.
Look, I'm not au fait.
Tish, for sure, an absolute nonsense. Chamberlain's piece of paper stunt, par exemple, pales into insignificance by the side of Churchill's fight them on the beaches shenanigans.
Ah, wonderful piece of oratory. But I wouldn't contend that that was a stunt.
No, not a stunt. Have you seen the 16mm film footage of that speech?
Well, not for a while, no.
Well, as he delivers the speech in full close-up, it's clear he's adjusting the strap of a foam helmet under his chin. At the conclusion of the Nazi baiting, the camera steps back and we see Churchill on a beach wearing just his underpants with a box of ferrets at his feet. As a stormtrooper-clad civil servant darts at him, Churchill grabs a fistful of ferret and lobs it in the poor man's face.
What? You're making this up?
Rodent abuse has always been a wonderful vote winner, as has bra theft.
Bra theft? Now, I know you're lying.
How else do you explain Major's rise to power?
Politics.
Your naivety is adorable, but misplaced. Major curried favour amongst the party by stealing and selling them Margaret's underwear, and William Hague did the same by fencing the man Major's underpants.
I really don't believe you.
You doubt the veracity of Kenneth Clark?
Kenneth Clark?
Bedecked beneath a wide-brimmed hat, he sat at your very seated position and nagged incessantly about his inability to procure boxer shorts. Admitted he toyed lightly with the idea of buying a batch from M&S and fobbing them off as Norman Tebbit, just to get back on the front benches. You call me a liar, you label Clark in the same manner. Do you insist Clark is some kind of truth-avoiding deviant?
Look, you really misrepresent me.
I am afeard you misrepresent yourself with your erroneous paper-based claims. Stunt politics, it's a British institution. I suggest a rewrite, or at least a retraction. Faulty research will disgrace your colleague and yourself.
I was told the paper did receive some unfavourable responses. I wonder if that was the reason.
Academia, a fickle filly. That's the only explanation for the Prime Minister's teeth.
I'm sorry?
Oh, it's not your fault. Imperial College conducted a study of the orthodontage of our country's leaders. They came to a simple conclusion. Then they changed their minds.
Oh?
I didn't tell anyone, of course. A professor took seatage upon this bench with me a few months back and confessed all. The whole study was based on a dare.
Ah, well, what did they publish?
So the insider gossip tickles your fancy?
Well, I must confess it does. Academic scandals are always fun.
They found that the number of teeth in the leader's mouth always increased by one with each power change. The pattern was broken only once, and that was when Churchill hit himself in the lips with a ferret on a beach in Dover. But that's besides the by. They concluded that the next Prime Ministers would have exactly 37 teeth. From all accounts, it sent Westminster into a dental frenzy. For weeks you couldn't pass an MP without observing one using its tongue to count its incisors. Only one person has that many teeth.
And who would that be?
Sebastian Coe.
So, the former runner will be our next Prime Minister?
No, as I said before, it was all a lie, hijinks.
Oh, I suppose in retrospect it does seem a frivolous way to determine world leaders.
Is it any more frivolous than the manner they use right now?
Ah, yes, elections have become less about policies and more about personalities.
Election? I scoff towards your general grid reference.
Oh?
World leaders aren't chosen by public votes, they're predetermined by shadowy men in darkened rooms.
Ah, you refer to the Bilderberg theories of extremists.
No, I refer to the fact that the world is run by Buzz Aldrin.
Oh, come on. Buzz Aldrin runs the world?
He did this year. The Apollo 11 crew take it in turns to run the planet. Buzz and Neil are allowed to run it for 2 years at a time. Michael Collins is only allowed to run it on a single year basis.
And why is that?
He's a moron. Michael Collins is single-handedly responsible for Vietnam, Aristotle and Onassis, and reality television. Armstrong, on the other wrist, can take credit for Perestroika, the collapse of the Berlin Wall, and Theresa May.
I see. And what has Buzz Aldrin contributed?
Feminism.
Okay then, sir. Who decided that these astronauts could run the world?
They did. When they splashed down, they immediately demanded an audience with Nixon. During a heated argument in the Oval Office, the I am not a crooked one made a critical error and accidentally handed them power. The triumvirate of moonwalkers asked for the reins. Nixon asked why they deserved it. They replied they'd walked on the moon. Nixon was flummoxed and relented. In a rage, he ordered the Watergate break-in. Astronauts brought down Nixon in more ways than one. They didn't quite realise the magnitude of what they'd taken on, everhow. After a few mishaps, not least Orange Decor, they devised a strategy to run the world based solely on the rock they'd fetched from the lunar surface.
I see.
They rolled it like a dice and made decisions based on the rolls.
Look, I really have much more important things to do.
I'm glad I've wasted so much of your precious time.
Good day to you, sir.
Publish and be damned.
Lying on a Bench was performed by John Richardson, Izzy Lawrence and Simon Dunn. It was written by Simon Dunn, with special thanks to Ian James and Ed Morrish.